Hi, everyone. I'm Eliza Lair.
And I'm Laura Del Campo.
So Laura and I have become fascinated with oysters, not just for their incredible history in New York's waters, but for the complexity of their flavor.
Recently, Eliza and I attended an oyster riot, where we had the chance to sample oysters from 10 different farms. The event, held at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, kicked off the third year of Oyster Week.
Rudy Ehrlich, founder of Oyster Week, greeted us at the gate. He explained why it's important for New York City to celebrate oysters.
Oyster Week celebrates everything that the oyster is, and it educates people about the integral role the oyster has in our economy, in our culture, and in our cuisine. So it's a way to come together and enjoy food, but it's also a way to sort of better understand New York's history and how we're all interconnected through our food source and our food distribution systems.
It's hard to tell the history of New York City without mentioning oysters. When the Dutch first settled on the island of Manhattan, the shallow harbor was teeming with oysters. In the 19th century, just 6 cents bought you all the oysters you could eat. Today, the harbor has virtually no oysters. So what happened?
The main thing that happens is that we ate them all. That's the first thing that happened.
Really?
Many people don't realize that by the early 1800s, we had eaten all the oysters. And we started importing them from the Chesapeake Bay and the Delaware Bay. And we turned all of New York Harbor into giant oyster farms. So you bring them up when they're little, put them down for a year or two, and then dredge them up and sell them. And that went on for almost 100 years, or 100 years. And then early 1900s, everyone started getting sick because the population of New York was... It increased to the point where we couldn't handle all the sewage, and we were pouring raw sewage on our oysters and then eating them, and it came into it was a huge surprise that you couldn't pour raw sewage on your food supply and then eat it and not get sick. But so then everyone stopped eating the oysters. And at that point, everyone sort of like turned their back on the harbor. This is gross. You don't want to do this anymore. And then it got really bad, and basically everything died. Until the Clean Water Act, 1972.
That's Pete Malinowski, director of the Billion Oyster Project. The BOP... is working to repopulate 1 billion live oysters in the New York City harbor within the next 20 years as a means of improving the quality of New York City's waterways.
So the reason the project is focusing on oysters is that one single oyster can filter about 30 to 50 gallons of water per day. So what does this mean for the harbor?
So you figure those billion oysters will filter the standing volume of the harbor once every 3 days.
The Billion Oyster Project is a completely student-run project. The students at the Harbor School, a public New York high school, spend half their day taking normal high school classes and being normal high school students. The other half of the day, they spend scuba diving, planting oyster reefs, driving boats, and working to restore New York's harbor.
The flavor of an oyster can be understood in a similar manner as wine. Terroir is apparent. The taste is totally influenced by where it grows. Here's Sarah Malinowski, an oyster farmer on Fisher's Island, located just above the tip of Long Island. And she also happens to be Pete's mom.
I think everything is involved with the flavor. It's so complicated.
All up and down the East Coast, it's all the same oyster. But they taste different. And some people on the West Coast are now growing Virginica, which is an East Coast oyster. And I would have thought that that would taste strictly like a West Coast oyster because it's all in the water. But it's not. Some of it's in the genetics.
So along the entire East Coast, the oysters have exactly the same genetics. They're all Ostra, Crassostrea, Virginicas. They taste different based on where they're grown and how they're raised, but not based on what breed they are. East Coast oysters tend to be much brinier than West Coast oysters. The Barnstable oyster in Cape Cod is a perfect example.
Like, imagine the very center and the marshiest part of the Cape.
And you can taste that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Marsh, yeah. Cape Cod water.
Yeah.
West Coast oysters are generally smaller and sweeter. Taylor Shellfish in Washington State grows two different types of Japanese varieties using two very different methods. Tom Stocks, Taylor Shellfish oyster bar manager, explains.
The Kumamotos come from Kumamoto Bay in the South Island, and when we grow them, they like places that are similar to that. Protected bays, calm waters, higher temperatures. The Shigokus, they're more dependent upon the tidal interchange. So the more the tides rise and fall, the better the Shigokus are.
So let's venture even further west now, over to New Zealand. Because the shell of an oyster closes so tightly when handled, you can ship live oysters across the world. Here's Brian Reno, a fellow Heritage Radio Network reporter's reaction to a wild New Zealand oyster, whose shape and flavor were unlike any of the oysters at the event.
So the shell is very narrow and very knobby, so it's kind of difficult to eat. It's super sweet, though, very, like, hits you immediately, no lingering effect at all, just kind of nails you. Really long finish, kind of melony, but really just kind of that, I want to say, like, syrupy sweetness in terms of how thick it is on the tongue.
The main beneficiary of Oyster Week is the Billion Oyster Project, along with a harbor school. But this doesn't quite mean what you think it does. All of the thousands of shells of oysters that were consumed during Oyster Week will be donated to the school. The students will place the shells in the harbor as base material for oyster reef restoration. If you want to learn more about how this works and about the harbor school and the Billion Oyster Project, stay tuned for our next piece, where we visit the school and take a trip out to the underwater classroom. Thanks so much for listening. For Heritage Radio Network, I'm Eliza Lair.
And I'm Laura Del Campo. Thanks for listening.